1 minutes to 10 is the time here on this Tuesday night. We do in this spot like to talk about health issues, and we speak with the great professionals of the Sydney Adventist Hospital in Sydney, one of the great medical institutions. And this is Parkinson's Awareness Month. Now, there are a lot of people affected by this, very high profile people like Michael J. Fox. Within my own family, I had an uncle. It was over 30 years ago. Who was struck down by Parkinson's. And so I'm like many families who saw the way it can strike people down in the most wicked and unfair way, shaking, tremors, things you link to the illness. But are we making progress on this? Tonight, I'm joined by Dr. Omar Ahmad. He's a neurologist at the Sydney Adventist Hospital, the SAN. Dr. Omar, good evening to you.
Good evening.
Let's just start as a starting point. Well, just explain what Parkinson's disease is so that we can use that as our starting point.
So I'll give you a slight overview. So it's called a neurodegenerative disorder. So it's complex, and it's mainly known for its motor manifestations, which include tremor, slowing of movement, and stiffness. But there are also a lot of non-motor symptoms as well. It also mainly affects the older population, but it is seen in those younger than 45 as well, and that makes up about 5 to 10% of cases as well. And it is quite common, so it is the second most common degenerative disorder after Alzheimer's, and it's progressive over time, and currently it hasn't got a cure. And despite this, there are many therapies that are available that alleviate symptoms and control symptoms as well.
And with Parkinson's, are there different kinds of Parkinson's? Or does it have a different effect? Do we see it having a more profound effect on different people based on which kind of Parkinson's it is?
Yeah, so there is normal Parkinson's that we call idiopathic Parkinson's disease, and that makes up about 85% of cases. But there are others that are different subtypes that have somewhat different pathologies, and they have different implications as well. Some of them are associated with more earlier cognitive or memory involvement. So there is differences between the subtypes, and that has implications. So it is good to be able to differentiate between the types.
So we know what it is and what it does. Do we know what causes it, why people contract it?
Well, not exactly, because it is still being worked out. We know what it accumulates in the nervous system, and it is due to abnormal protein accumulation, which is called alpha-synuclein. And that is probably the end result of several pathological processes. And this starts well before the actual physical manifestations develop, so many years beforehand, in fact. So we do know the end result of what happens, but not a lot of what happens prior to this.
Yeah. Can you actually find that accumulation? You say it's happening many years before the symptoms. Is it possible to identify that accumulation and say you're going down this path?
Well, yes, but it becomes difficult in terms of counselling, because you can find it on biopsy specimens, that's true, and you can find it outside of the nervous system as well. So you do see it in clonic biopsies, actually, if it is done in some cases. So you can find it in salivary glands, even, actually. So it can be seen in these locations as well, outside of the nervous system. But it's not clear that these patients will all inevitably go on to have Parkinson's. It becomes a difficult situation there.
Yeah, I guess the issue, question I'm asking is, if you were able to identify it, is there any treatment that can slow it, that can manage it early on?
Sure. So in terms of controlling it, there have been some trials in terms of antibodies against this alpha-synuclein, and they did come out last year, and unfortunately, they weren't showing any benefit in terms of outcomes. But it's possible that we are treating the process too late in the piece. So this is in those who already had Parkinson's. It's possible that you have to treat much earlier, before the onset of symptoms, which happens many years before you do get motor findings, in fact.
That's really hard, though, as you've said, because it could be, you might find someone, it could be a young person, relatively young person, they may have these early signs, and you might then decide, well, I'm going to tell this person that they need to modify their behaviour, take these drugs, because they might develop Parkinson's. Is that the dilemma you have there?
It is, because we don't actually know, or we don't think that the drugs change the outcome of the condition as such. We do know that exercise probably does reduce the incidence, or there is an association with in large studies of moderate to vigorous exercise reducing the likelihood of developing Parkinson's quite a bit, in fact, by up to 40%. And that's similar with Alzheimer's as well. So moderate to high intensity exercise in midlife will reduce a lot of these degenerative disorders developing later in life, in fact.
It sounds to me like this is one of those conditions where we've learned a lot more about it and there's progress been made in managing it, but it's nowhere near the progress you'd like.
Exactly. It's still a lot to be done. It may require a lot of approaches towards treatment, in fact. It's not just medications to alleviate the symptoms, but we have to find out how we target the pathological process, and there's probably several that are going on that need to be targeted once, potentially.
And I'm assuming each individual's different, but are we talking here about a situation where you can treat the symptoms and perhaps alleviate some of the impact of the symptoms, but at this stage there's nothing that can slow the deterioration?
That's all we think. So the medications that we use for Parkinson's are there to alleviate the symptoms, and they most people do respond. About 70 to 80% do find a response to these medications. But we don't think it's not changing the pathological process that's underlying it. That's the thing. Exercise is probably still good, even if you have Parkinson's. It does certainly alleviate a lot of the symptoms as well. But it's hard to say if that's having any effect on the long-term prognosis as well. And that data is still a bit early as well.
Whenever I speak to neurologists, we always comment with them about how much we still have to learn about the brain. This would be one of those areas, I'm guessing. And from you, there'd be an underlying frustration, wouldn't there?
Absolutely.
You'd be opening up your medical journals and hoping someone's got a breakthrough somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, this has also been the case in Alzheimer's research. We've attempted many drugs that have tried to target the accumulated protein and abnormal protein that's there, and most of those have shown negative results. So it's a similar situation in Parkinson's. It's quite a complex disorder, as is Alzheimer's. So that is frustrating, and it's been many decades of research that has gone into this disorder.
If someone thinks they may have some of the symptoms or something happening, what should they do?
Well, I think it should be easy enough to see a GP initially, and often they are attuned to these symptoms and signs as well. So that would be the initial step, and then it's a matter of seeing a neurologist, or if there's an alternative, you could also see a geriatrician who they also deal with Parkinson's disease as well.
I appreciate your time tonight. One day, not that far away, we might have a conversation about something that's happened, some of your research, some of the research that's being done that gives you a lot more tools to deal with this wicked condition. I think it's a good term, isn't it, for this and Alzheimer's and some of these other conditions that people like you are trying to understand and are treating on a daily basis. And when I say daily basis, how common is it among, in the community?
So it's a 1% of the population over the age of 60.
It's 1 in 100.
That's pretty common.
That's right. Yeah. You get 1,000 people together, and there's 10. Yeah. So, All right. Look, I appreciate your time tonight, and as I say, hopefully we can have a conversation again in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes, and of course, that's Dr. Omar Ahmad. He's a neurologist at the Sydney Adventist Hospital. We speak with him. It's a great institution, of course, the Sydney Adventist Hospital, which does wonderful work, particularly in the area of research. But you could sense the frustration when you're dealing with something as wicked and as insidious as Parkinson's, and they're still trying to make those really important first steps to try and identify what causes it and how its progression can be stopped. Let's hope we're having a conversation about that in the not too distant future. It is now 12 minutes to 10 now.